Your attention, please. The Walt Disney World Railroad, now boarding for a scenic trip around the Magic Kingdom. Board!
Well, Brad, I wanted to open this week and talk about something that I have heard a lot about when planning for Disney trips and stuff, but I've never used. So touringplans.com is, I guess they sell themselves as two different things. A very, very efficient way to do Disney and a way that you can do the things that you want to do at your speed. Mm-hmm. So just kind of a quick overview of what this app offers that I have.
Hey, Jeremy, real fast. How much of a kickback are we getting on this?
No kickback. Shame on them.
Dang it.
Shame
on them.
Okay,
so this is not a sponsored, because I will not fault anyone for thinking that this is sponsored content, but no, this is not sponsored content.
Nah.
This is legitimately Jeremy just going, huh, what would be useful for my upcoming Disney vacation?
So, yeah, it's, I think, $15 for a year, and you get a discount on that if you buy the book. They have an unofficial guide they release every year, and you get a discount if you buy the book. But I just bought the subscription.
But that's after I pay for the book, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So the app, the main thing that it has is what they call crowd levels. And so you can go in here and you can see, like, today at Walt Disney World, just as an example, these are all out of 10. Magic Kingdom's at a 5, Epcot's at a 2, Hollywood Studios is at a 5, and Animal Kingdom is at a 3. And so not only will it do that for today, it will use historical data from, like, years and years of data, and it will tell you what it, you know, thinks the crowd levels are going to be like on whatever day you're going. So I put in, you know, November 25th in mine, and it shows me that, you know, time you're going to be here, here's what we think the crowd levels are going to be like. So that's cool. You can do that when you're making your park reservations. You can make your reservations for parks that have lower expected crowd levels, and then you've at least got a good baseline. I like that a lot. It's got, you know, all the normal stuff. It's got wait times, and they're doing, I think they're using Disney's posted wait times and historical wait times to kind of calculate an expected wait, not necessarily a posted wait, but an expected wait. So that's also handy. And this Touring Plans has been around for a long time, and they have a lot of data that they're pulling from. And I'm impressed by how accurate they are, how they can say, you know, oh, there's a 60-minute posted wait for Space Ranger Spin. You're actually going to wait 32 minutes. You know, your expected wait is 32 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever. You know, like, they are using all this data they have and the knowledge that they have of what the posted wait versus actual wait is to calculate these expected wait times. And then the third big thing so far that I found in this app is you can make a plan. And a plan, you tell them what park you're going to be in, what attractions you want to do, your walking speed, and different things like that. And then it will actually go in there and help you figure out, if you get to Magic Kingdom when it opens, the first thing you should go do is Pirates, and then walk over to Big Thunder Mountain, and then go over to Tomorrowland, and blah, 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 whatever, and kind of help you plan down to the minute. Like, here's where we expect you to be able to do at this walking time, and they're building in travel time and the amount of time it takes you to walk at a leisurely stroll, you know, leisurely pace back to the gate and get to the buses. And so they're even doing that. Like, you can get that granular and make a, you know, they call that a plan.
Right.
Which I've not done yet. And then I have not had the chance to use any of their, like, dining help stuff yet. They have different things that you can use to try to help you get reservations somewhere, to know when, you know, a good time to check for new reservations opening up is. And I don't know how they're getting that data, but I don't know. It's just been, it's really interesting to see a company like that, that has a ton of historical data and clearly good algorithms, who can go in and use the data that Disney provides and their data and coalesce all that into really, you know, useful stuff, really useful, especially for wait times, useful stuff. I'm really impressed, and I'm looking forward to, as the trip gets closer, to actually make some plans and see, you know, if nothing else, like, just to see how that works, to see if the plan is actually even close to, like, if I go into Hollywood Studios at open, I should be able to walk back to, you know, Slinky Dog Dash and do it pretty quick, stuff like that, you know.
Right.
I'm interested in that.
Yeah, so I've never used that, like, the paid stuff from Touring Plans, though I'm really interested to hear how it goes, because, you know, I had a friend go on a trip recently, and I tried to help them kind of plan things out, and it was one of those things where they were going for, like, 2 or 3 days and trying to do as much as they could, and it was part of something related to work, so they were going to have, you know, they wouldn't be there to rope drop and all these things. And, like, helping somebody new plan a trip to Disney just reminds me how overwhelming all of this stuff is if you don't already know all the ins and outs and all the vernacular and all the things. Like, she texted me multiple times, "This is crazy how much they expect me to know about."
Mm-hmm.
How am I supposed to know what I'm going to be doing on XYZ?
Well, yeah, so, and crazy how much they expect you to know what you're going to want to do on what day.
Right. So if something like this is that helpful, I could see recommending something like this to people, because, you know, while $18 is not no money, which is the cost for a year subscription, okay, I could see that easily providing $18 in value, you know, if it actually, essentially what it sounds like is, you know, the plan part kind of sounds like what Genie was supposed to be.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah,
what Genie exactly was sold as.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking when I was looking through that. I was like, yeah, that's exactly. Disney purported to be able to, in an automated fashion, get you, you know, the things that you want to do and how to do them in a timely manner.
Right. So I will say I've used their, you know, back when I was still staying on property, they have a tool that lets you see, you know, so like you click on a resort and then you can open their room views and you can actually select, you know, like room types. So the standard view with a king bed in it, or, you know, the preferred view with a king bed in it, or, you know, preferred room or whatever. And you can see, for example, Pop Century, what buildings have those types of rooms in them.
Hmm.
You know, so that gives you an idea of if I make a reservation for that, I'm likely to end up with a building like this. And you can even go to the building, click on one of the rooms that is available with what you want. You know, so like, say I'm going to get a standard view room and I want to get it in this building, and I see that this room is listed as one that would be that way. And they even give you, you know, ways to go about trying to request that room, which, you know, is always going to be a, you know, kind of roll of the dice, but you have a chance of getting that room. So I think stuff like that can be really nice. I will say, though, that with their dining reservation stuff, on my last trip, you know, I had everything that I could find that was free, which some of their dining reservation finder stuff you can do with just their free subscription. I was using them and I was using mousedining.com, and I found that I was having better luck getting alerts and getting them quicker through Mouse Dining. Your mileage may vary on that. I would recommend doing what I did and just setting up account, you know, set up on both of those, because Mouse Dining does have a free plan, you know, that you could set up, I think, a couple of alerts on. And so you may want to do that there as well, just to kind of test. And that would be interesting, because maybe if you pay, you get faster results.
I was
going
to say
maybe
paying customers get access to the good servers.
Right. Yeah. Get the very first notifications, and then when all those have gone out, then they start sending. And honestly, I would have no hard feelings if that's the way that they decided to go about it, because they got bills to pay like everybody else. So now I'm interested to hear about this, because this is one of those services that if you do a lot of planning, you're going to come across Tor plans or touringplans.com.
Yes.
And dude, this sounds so much like sponsor content. I promise it's not.
No, it's not.
You come across this website here and there, and so I have looked at it before and thought, nah, I'm not going to spend 18, because I quote unquote know enough that I'm not going to get $18 in value out of it. But now I've got somebody else who can tell me, whether or not I'm going to get $18.
And honestly, that's why I bought it. I want to see if that's the case. Am I going to get anything out of this, or is this going to be a glorified, vacation journal thing? Is something else I need to keep up with my reservations and putting them in and everything. I don't know, but yeah, I think it's worth the $18 to just see if this is something that is actually worth doing. And I haven't looked into, there's a chat function where you can go in and chat and ask questions of other people and have a little community in there. So I have not tried that yet. But yeah, I'll be interested to see, as the trip gets closer and I use the service a little bit more, how it shakes out.
Gonna jump in chat, say, hey guys, Genie Plus, oofa doofa, am I right?
Who else loves Individual Lightning Lane? It's me, Bob Chapek.
No, that's Bob C003.
Yeah.
Definitely not Bob Chapek.
Cool Bob.
Yes.
Ouch. So another thing that I've been wanting to talk about for a while is downtimes. And we've talked, at length about Rise of the Resistance and how it's down, on a daily basis for almost 2 hours is the average still. Like,
is that, I was about to say, is that still the case?
Yes. 'Cause years after it's open, on average, 120 minutes a day. And so, that's just crazy. That's a lot of time for an attraction to be down. But I was able to find the average downtimes of a lot of other attractions. Mm-hmm. So, Rise is obviously the most, 120 minutes average. But then Splash Mountain is down for an average of 75 minutes a day. And I don't think about Splash Mountain as being down for over an hour a day, but I guess if you have 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there and then 5 minutes, and that can, that can stack up throughout the day. But man, yeah, Splash Mountain, an attraction that has, is by no means new and has been there for a long time, it's still down for 75 minutes a day.
And then, yeah, I think that, but you kind of hit on the big thing there, which is how are those downtimes spread out, right? Because if that was a single downtime per day, then it would be notable. But if it's, things were unavailable for, 30 minutes here and 30 minutes there. And honestly, I'm not terribly surprised by Splash, because Splash is an outdoor attraction. And so weather could possibly be affecting that downtime.
That's true. Then you have Big Thunder. It's down for approximately, 60 minutes a day. Winnie the Pooh. Yeah. Winnie the Pooh, 50 minutes a day. What do you make of that?
Outdoor weather.
Pooh? Is the load outdoor? Yeah, okay.
No. The ride building is in the outdoors, and so no, I'm totally messing with you. I have no clue why Pooh would be down for 50 minutes a day.
It's everything is technically outdoors, Brad.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Pooh, I guess, I don't know. It's a very simple attraction. I cannot really imagine what would be happening with Winnie the Pooh. Pirates, it's 45 minutes. I guess that's Pirates.
That's where the boats got backed up too much.
Yeah, I guess so. Pirates is a little more complex. Space Mountain, it's 40 minutes a day, which honestly that feels like too low because I feel like Space Mountain's just backed up constantly. But then like, so Haunted Mansion and Seven Dwarfs Mine Train are both 30 minutes on average. Peter Pan's 25 minutes on average. Astro Orbiter, Barnstormer also 25 minutes. So I don't actually know.
So wait. So that kind of throws my outdoor theory out the window.
Because Astro Orbiter?
Because if it was Astro Orbiter especially would be, you know, seeing those high weights, those high times. So I guess that whatever data source you're using isn't, you know, or is calculating downtimes that are not weather related. I guess what I would need to know is what do they have listed as the average downtime for Test Track? Mm. Because as far as outdoor attractions, I you know, and maybe it's because my home park was Epcot, you know, that was the one that any time it sprinkled, that attraction went down because you know that it would get slick on the outdoor track, and so they would have to take it offline until the weather let up or whatever. But yeah, Astro Orbiter surely has more downtimes due to weather than Splash does. So yeah, I guess maybe Splash just isn't. But I mean, there are a lot of moving parts to Splash.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lots of lift hills, lots of moving parts, like you said.
Right.
Yeah, I don't actually know what I wanted to, you know, get out of this other than.
You're trying to be a Rise of the Resistance apologist.
I just find it interesting.
Hey guys, everybody has downtime.
I find it interesting how much longer Rise is down from everything else. Mm-hmm. Even still, you know, years after it's been almost 3 years, you know, since it opened, and just the massive difference between Rise and then, you know, the next highest one, which is Splash Mountain. If I had to, I don't know if these downtimes include weather, but if I had to guess, I would say they probably don't. And this is downtimes that are caused by malfunctions. Because the fact that, you know, Splash and Astro Orbiter are on the same, and Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and all those are on the same list as Haunted Mansion and Rise of the Resistance and, you know, Pooh, all these rides that, you know, even if it's a hurricane outside, you can still experience as long as the electricity's working, they're fine. So I would assume that these wait times are based on malfunctions only and not on closures due to weather.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, thinking about it, Haunted Mansion, when I've been on it and Haunted Mansion has gone down, it's normally for like 2 minutes, you know, like all the Doom Buggy stop. And I've always assumed that was just somebody loading or unloading slow.
Well, and yeah, that can be a huge part of it is, you know, sometimes your Doom Buggy will slow down because of a, you know, somebody needing that extra time. And if it is a big enough issue for the person trying to get in or out of the attraction, they will literally just stop the attraction to allow that person to get off, you know, cause like not everybody can do a moving walkway. And so they're like, hey, we'll stop it. You'll get out, or we'll stop it. You'll get on. And then we'll just start it back up. No biggie.
Which is wild to me because, I hadn't really thought until I rode on the Skyliner about how, you know, they would get people in wheelchairs and stuff like that onto a Skyliner, but the fact that they have like three cars that just sit in reserve in this in the like secondary load area, and then mm-hmm. they just kind of slot themselves back in when they're ready to go is a genius way to do that, because then you don't ever stop the flow of cars. And you just slot I guess you technically do when you need to slot the other one back in, but for the most part, like, you don't stop the flow, and that is such a great idea. And that's obviously not doable on an Omnimover attraction because all of the cars are connected to each other. But I just think that the way that they did the Skyliner is so smart, because it's a way to give everybody as much time as they need to get in and out, but also the regular running of it doesn't ever stop.
Yeah, it's just it's always going. And in fact, I can tell you from personal experience that if you have an ECV or a wheelchair and you need to get on the Skyliner, it can actually be a disadvantage to you because, you know, the allotment of vehicles for that is much lower. And so, like, you'll see the line is just chugging, you know, and it's like every seventh vehicle or eighth vehicle is going to be an ECV one. So it can actually be slower for people in that line, which is kind of funny, like, but it all works out. And even slower, it's still not a crazy wait most of the time.
Are they different on the inside?
No, they're not.
Okay.
It's just I think it's the number that they're allotting to each, to try to even out the allotment or whatever.
Sure. So I just didn't know if they had smaller benches or, you know, some other kind of accoutrement.
And note that I could be wrong about this stuff because it's been a while since I've ridden a Skyliner, but as I recall, like, any Skyliner could be either or, right? Kind of like with the monorail, any car can be handicap accessible or not, right? They bring the ramp over and boom, you can put an ECV in that car. So, yeah, I don't know though, dude. I don't think Rise is ever going to fix their downtime problems until they completely rebuild that attraction. And I don't think they're going to completely rebuild that attraction. No.
It's just so funny because the Disneyland version doesn't have this problem.
Well, but they learned from their mistakes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it opened second. It had the benefit of, I think, 6 months.
I don't remember. It wasn't a lot, but apparently it was enough to fix some of the glaring issues. Like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do this one thing at some early stage. And it's got to be like something that was at some super early stage, or I don't know. Maybe they would have to close it for 6 months to fix it, and they just can't. Yeah. See closing it for 6 months.
Well, that was the whole thing with COVID was like, man, can you imagine if Imagineering had been allowed to be?
Right. Yeah, I remember when you and I had that discussion about, oh man, maybe they'll figure out some way to actually get this fixed. And
a whole year of having no one there. They would have nobody trying to ride that thing for a year. That it would have 0 minutes of downtime. Had they been able to just sit there and like straight work on it.
I will be interested with so based on the data that you have, Splash is the second highest, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to know if that data stays the same when it's what are we calling it, Princess in the Log?
Yes.
The one true name. Because they are going to have that opportunity for it to be close to everyone for some extended period of time. So it'll be interesting to see if whatever it is that causes that sort of issue can be fixed, you know, when they have that much of an opportunity, because we know they're not, or I guess we don't know anything. We feel relatively confident saying that the major aspects of the ride, you know, the way that the ride goes and all those sorts of things, none of that is going to change, right? The track, if you will,
right,
will still be the track. It's just going to be a change of theming around everything. And again, could be totally wrong about this, but I think that this is a pretty safe bet personally.
Yeah, I hope so.
If they can fix whatever it is that causes that, which is, I assume, I don't know, dude, they probably can't fix it, because how much of that 60 minutes is people putting their hands out of the side and tripping the sensor that says that somebody just got out of a boat.
Yeah, maybe.
Which then shuts down the whole ride while they try to find the person, and then...
Is that an infrared thing?
I don't know. I think so.
Or is it a pressure thing?
It wouldn't surprise me if it's a little bit of both. I know that there are, living with the land, you can easily see, the infrared sort of beam sensors or whatever.
Especially now. Right.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they're like, guys, the sensors are right here. The cameras are right here.
The cucumbers are not for you.
Right. Yes. Man, if they don't, why didn't they just be like cucumbers lol or something like that? Come on, Disney, just lean into it. But I feel like Splash has those beams as well, and probably depending on where it is, some sort of a pressure thing too, and then has cameras everywhere. So I don't know. There's probably a lot of things that can't be fixed, but I don't know. Let's see if there is some change. But yeah, I think the moral of the story is, while downtimes are probably higher than you would have thought on some attractions, it's still not acceptable on Rise.
Yeah, 2 hours is not good.
Yeah, and also for a new, like, Disney has done a lot in recent years and on Rise as well to take things that would have created downtime and make them not create downtime by B-moding them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there are so many opportunities where, Kylo isn't working. Okay, we gotta take the ride down while we get him sorted out. Well, no, now we've gotta, we shut it down for 10 minutes and set B-mode active, and then he's good to go. Or, what's his face over at Smuggler's Run? We just wheel out the crate and
put the box on top of him.
Yeah, yeah, the totally inconspicuous crate, and then we're good to go. Oh man, that's such a weird thing to do for the B mode. I mean, I get why, like, it would add so many more points of failure to make him, fold down or something, but at the same time, that there has to be a box put over him. It's just crazy. But yeah, so new attractions having these ways to keep those things. Like, imagine what the stoppage would be like on Rise if they didn't have that ability. Or would it just, I don't know. So do you think it would lead to more downtime, or would we just have more Disco Yeti in Rise if they didn't have B mode, right? They just stick a strobe light on Kylo Ren to make you scared of that section because he's not working anymore.
That would be great.
Because strobe lights make everything scarier. honestly, the A mode of that, maybe just try a strobe light, guys. It might not be the worst idea in the world.
Yeah.
Because not letting me see him in his full motion could work for you. Could be a positive overall.
I'll shout it from the rooftops forevermore. That's B for better. B for better mode.
Indeed, indeed.
I think that'll do it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter at MTM Podcast. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MTM Podcast. You can visit us on the web at missingthemouse.co. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Until then, have a magical day.